Welcome to Texas Style Coworking. The Ranch Office is a neighborhood community office that delivers a warm atmosphere with a heavy dose of Southern hospitality. Located in Memorial, Katy, and Baytown, we offer private offices, conference rooms, event space, and much more. Come change things up and check us out. Remember, life is better at the ranch.
In a global industry where anything can happen, where mistakes cost much more than dollars, we bring you expertise from around the world to ensure that everyone goes home safe every day. The internationally acclaimed Oil and Gas HSE podcast starts now with your host, Russell Stewart.
Hey, everybody. As always, thanks for listening. Today, my guest on the show is Chris Callen. Chris is the president and founder of the Callen Group. Is that right, Chris?
That is correct.
Well, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Well, Chris, I'm excited about a couple things. One is you're the author of a book called Commit to Safe and Efficient Operations, and we're going to get into that here in a few minutes. But I think one of the reasons that, as I say, this is considered to be a top-rated HSE oil and gas podcast, and as I always say, it's not because of the host of the show, it's because of the quality of the guests that we have come on. And not only is it the quality of the guests that we have come on, but sometimes it's the interesting, and I would even say inspiring, stories of the guests who come on. So, Chris, the Callen Group is, I guess, headquartered in Lafayette, Louisiana, right?
We're actually headquartered here. I live in
Houston?
Lafayette.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So we're at the office here in Houston. You live in Lafayette. This is actually where the headquarters are. But you're not from Louisiana originally, right?
No, I'm originally from Florida, but I've been in Louisiana for a long, long time.
So how does a Florida guy get to Louisiana?
Well, it was an interesting journey. And today I'll try to keep that bar up of these great HSC folks and not ruin it too bad. But yeah, I got out of college in Jackson, Mississippi.
Jackson, Mississippi. So that's
Belhaven College in Jackson.
Okay.
Graduated with a degree in accounting and business administration. Went to work for City Service Oil Company as an accountant. And about a year and a half into it, I hated my job and quit and swore I'd never get back in the oil field. Now, it wasn't the oil field. I'm a recovering accountant, so I'm still working on that. But anyway, I got into, and I don't tell many people about this, but we talked about this at lunch today. I got in the restaurant business and moved to Lafayette to open a place. And when I got my first management job, I went, oh my gosh, this is harder. I can do the work, but being a leader is tough. So one morning I was watching the CBS Morning News, and here's this guy, Ken Blanchard, and he's talking about this book, The One-Minute Manager. And I go, gosh, I need to read that. That's my philosophy. And that started me reading every leadership book I can get my hands on and going to every seminar I could. And in my business at the time, it was like, how do I get a bunch of college kids to be motivated to come to work every day? And so I had a great time doing that. And when my fourth child was on the way, decided to sell the business in 1997 and decided to go back to work at the university because I wanted to get my master's and teach entrepreneurship because I don't think I learned much in college. I'm not sure what I learned. But anyway.
Well, you learned accounting and you learned you didn't like that.
I did. I learned I didn't like it. And I think that's an important lesson sometimes is you get a job you don't like, there's always something that transfers from there. And so anyway, Randy Smith, some people will know of Randy Smith Drilling Schools at the time, and then became Moody and everything. He said, hey, you do that leadership stuff. Why don't you come and work with us? So I came and started teaching leadership. And then in, I guess it was 1998, Global Marine at the time came to us to do some behavioral safety. Now, at the time, I couldn't even spell safety, much less, be able to teach it. But we knew oil field. We knew the guys. And so I started learning that. And then during that journey is when my passion became, it's leadership, but it's also how do we get guys to work safe? And as that turned along, it turned into basically my philosophy is safe and efficient operations. So the last 27 years, I've traveled to 90 countries around the world and trained and done coaching and consulted and had a great time doing it.
Well, you say you didn't know anything about safety, but I think what you quickly learned, and you and I talked about this at lunch, the big thing about safety is leadership, right?
It is. It is. Leadership sets the tone. People ask me sometimes, are all supervisors leaders? And I say, absolutely. Now, where they're leading us is a different story.
How they're leading may be a different story, yeah.
Right, and where they're leading us. But the fact is, if you're a supervisor, you're influencing people. So which way are you going to influence them? So when leadership gets clicked on and they really start to not just fill out paperwork, but guys, how are we going to do this job safely? How are we going to do it efficiently? When they start doing that, it sets the tone out there. So leadership will make or break you, but it's when they get involved, it's an amazing. That's when you start to see the magic work. HSC people are there to support operations and safety, but you know, it's really leaders. It's really the operations folks that have to take this as part of their job. I have a friend of mine that was a big believer in not having HSC guys offshore. And I was like, how can you do that? And his belief was, well, if we do that, what happens is the leaders go, well, that's the safety guys. And they just kind of push everything off on them and they don't realize it's them. So I think that's changed a lot. But the fact of the matter is, when you've got, you know, 10 souls working for you in OIM that's got 150 on board, or you're in land rig where there's 28, 30 people running around at all times, you know, you're responsible for those guys. So leading them in the right way and to work safely is important.
Okay, put a bookmark right there. I want to come back to that in just a second. But before we do, especially because you and I are old and we have such a young audience, Ken Blanchard, is that book still in publication?
It is still in publication.
The One-Minute Manager.
The One-Minute Manager.
And then you told me at lunch you had like 350 leadership books in your library.
I do. My shelves are packed with them.
Man. So you got Covey.
I got Covey. name him. Dennis Waitley, as we talked
Dennis
about.
Dennis Waitley, yeah.
Believe it or not, I actually have this book called The Art of the Deal by Donald Trump. But that, I bought it 30 years ago. So, interesting.
You know, I'll be honest with you. Back in those days, and you said you've actually been to conferences and you were able to meet Zig Ziglar and
Jim Rowe and Dennis Waitley as well.
Okay, so some of you, I know all of the younger audience out there listening, you may have heard of Zig Ziglar. He's so popular, I think maybe even young folks have heard of Zig Ziglar, but you probably never heard of Jim. I'm almost certain you never heard of Dennis Waitley. Back then, we called them motivational speakers.
Right.
You know, today it's life coaches, you know, that sort of thing. I don't know who the, honestly, and maybe I should find out and have them come on the show. I don't know who the life coaching gurus are today. But folks, the Ken Blanchards, the Stephen Coveys, the Dennis Waitleys, those guys, this is back in the 80s. If you want to learn about leadership, Dennis Waitley was the guy who coined, if I remember correctly, he's pretty much the father of the expression win-win, which is a great concept in leadership. If you guys out there don't know what that is, look these guys up. But back to my bookmark here. So 7 years ago, you start the Callan Group.
Yes.
Right?
7 years ago, I was senior vice president and partner with a consulting firm here in Houston. I just realized that I had a philosophy that I just felt like I needed to go in a little bit different direction. We were doing some good work, but I wanted to do that. So April 1st, 7 years ago, we started the company. You know, I could see in the future, and I knew the downturn was going to be over with in 6 months. Obviously, I don't see in the future. So,
and you didn't see COVID.
No, I didn't see COVID coming at all. But, you know, hey, we made it through that times, and it's been a great ride, but it's been a ride through this.
Well, great. Congratulations. And you work for some companies that we've never heard of, like Seadrill.
Yes. Yeah,
you want to name any others?
Since we've been with the Callan Group, we worked with Rowan, who's now Valaris. We worked with Enterprise Offshore, Murphy. We've worked with Seadrill. We just finished going around the world training everybody from the newest roustabout, the COO of the company. And so we, you know, working for Cosmos, doing a little work for them right now. So some are small, some are big.
Okay, so back to where we said the bookmark was, and having HSE people on the rig and being about leadership and your friends saying, well, I really don't need HSE people on there. The key to that is coaching, isn't it?
I believe it is. It was real interesting because I was working for BHP, gosh, this is probably 15 years ago, and I went offshore. And I watched this HSC guy, and he was incredible. A guy named Yancey Edwards. Some people may know him in town. And I thought all HSC people were there. He was out on deck. He was coaching people. He could do paperwork real quick so he could get that stuff done. But he was out on deck. And to me, that's where the power is. We've spent a lot of times putting guys in the office and doing whatever the OIM wants and whatever the company man wants. But the power is when they get out on deck and start coaching, not being a cop, just coaching people. There's a difference there.
And go ahead and expand upon that, because we talk about it all the time. This, my background in oil and gas, I dealt with much smaller operators. Let's be honest, this has been a few years ago. Safety wasn't exactly front and center, okay?
Yes.
I think it is so much more today with the entire industry, which is one of the reasons for this podcast. We want to promote it. But they went through some growing, especially these smaller companies who were trying to learn how to have safety programs and that sort of thing. And that's how it started off, was what I call the traffic cop thing.
Right.
Where we're trying to, I even knew of one company who they were told that if they didn't report some safety infraction on one of their peers, they got in trouble. You know, it was horrible. This, you know, we're trying to hide in the bushes and, you know, see what we can do to write you a ticket and that sort of thing.
Some of that goes back even to the one-minute manager, which is crazy. I've given that book, hundreds of them, away to young managers over the years, but it's about catching people doing something right. So a coach, when they go out, they look for what's going good and they build upon that. Then they start to help them to get better. But a cop is the one that just goes out and finds things that are wrong. Sometimes they'll tell that person, sometimes they won't. They'll just go and write it up. And which is like,
yeah, and what good does that do?
What good does that do?
Right.
Didn't really help. But we've come so far, and I believe that we do need HSC guys out there. But what we do need is we need them out on deck. We need them out, and, you know, for high-risk operations and for the lower risk as well. When you do the little things right, when you do the little jobs safe and efficient, well, then it's just going to be natural to do the big jobs safe and efficient. And right now, we've probably as an industry gotten really good at the big jobs. We all come together. We have a big meeting. We go through a risk assessment. We're all on the same page. But we seem to be hurting people with the little jobs, because safety's got to become a way of life. It's got to be a part of your DNA. It can't just be a separate part of your job. It is part of anybody working in a high-risk industry. It's part of their job as well.
And for all you young people out there learning principles of success and leadership, always remember that if you can't be trusted with the little thing, what makes you think you're going to be able to be trusted with the big thing?
And absolutely.
That's the principle that everybody needs to be aware of.
Yeah. As a leader and a company owner at times, when I couldn't manage my own personal budget at home, who was going to give me their company to manage?
Good point.
When I learned how to manage my money and the small money, then I've been able to manage big dollars. So it's about the little things.
Okay. So on your website, there's three things you do primarily. So one of them is coaching.
One of them is coaching.
And now how does that, give me, like you say, you just finished this deal with Seadrill. Did y'all do coaches?
Or? Yes.
Okay, so how does that work?
So we do coaching, facilitation, and consulting. So with Seadrill, what we did is we did a thing called Start Safe for all their, as rigs were coming back to the fleet, as rigs were going to work again, we would go out and we'd bring everybody in and we teach a three-day class, usually two classes for a jackup, four classes for a semi or drill ship. But then what we'd do is a coach would go out for the first 30 days out on the rig, and he would coach the leaders. I've been part of coaching for about 18 years now, and we used to go out and coach the guys that were working out on the rigs, the roustabouts and roughs.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
But then when we left, their leaders weren't coached, so they just go back to doing what they were before. And what we realized is when we train, everybody gets the same message. They all hear from leadership what's expected. They all know how their core systems work, and that's what we teach in a classroom. And then when we go out and coach, we're coaching those behaviors. How do leaders lead those behaviors? How do they lead that out there? And so it works so well for the ships that were coming, going back to work and being put back to work after being stacked, that they went ahead and did the entire fleet.
They could tell a difference.
They could tell a difference. In fact, what they realized is that when we did start, say, for the startups, and we got management in the room, by the way, management doesn't come in and just wave and say, hey, good to be here. They come in, they sit on a table for 3 days. They get to know the people, they listen to the people, and they start. It's amazing because they realize how to support their guys. And so when you see the vice president sitting in a class for 3 days, you start to go, I think they're pretty serious about this stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's so many different components like that that came into it. But a coach is out there not to tell them what to do, but a coach will stand near a leader and they'll ask questions. He'll look out and he'll say, how much do you think that weighs? And the driller would go, he shouldn't be picking that up. And then you'll go and intervene. And then we just talk about how do you coach these guys and how do you do that? So it's a lot of asking questions. It's a lot of being curious, but it's pulling out. Most of these guys work hard. They've got leadership. They want to get the job done safely and efficiently. They just need to kind of take those skills and go, ah, this will help. And sometimes it's just a few little tweaks that'll take a guy from being a good leader to being a great leader, or from being a bad leader to being a good leader.
To being a good leader?
Yes.
Yeah, so. Okay, so coaching is one, consulting.
And then consulting. Consulting is, we've been doing this a long time. So when we come in, we can look at people's management systems. And sometimes I look in the management systems and go, well, if you want to know why they're not doing it, it's because they don't understand it. And how do we simplify some of that? Some of it's just looking at the implementation. Very seldom do I see, well, we need to change all the tools out there. Most people have the right tools, but it's just a matter of—
They're just not using them right? Or
they're just not using them right. And a lot of people didn't even understand the importance. I had a rig manager down in Brazil tell me, been doing job safety analysis for 7 or 8 years, and this was about 10 years ago. And after coming to a seminar, he looked at me and he said, so these JSAs, these are really for safety, aren't they? And it was like, well, yeah.
You know what, folks? That right there was worth the price of admission for this podcast.
And I will not name his name.
But that is, you know, you cannot let those, well, first of all, what you said, understanding the purpose.
Yes.
You know, in some, probably people in my age range, you may have done this same thing. Sometimes you would ask your parents why.
Right.
And it was because I told you so.
Right.
And I tell you, I made a lot of mistakes raising my kids, but I promised myself that I would never, ever raise my kids with the, and when they ask me, why are you doing this? Because I told you so. And I can honestly say, and I confess this, and I raised two kids. They're all now in their 40s and I have grandchildren. One time in the entire 18 to 20 years that I raised them, did I get so frustrated that I just finally blurted out, because I told you so. But that's not the way to motivate people, is it?
No. Now, there are times I've had to say, do it because I told you, but then I go back and tell them why. You may be in an emergency situation, but I think we were all frustrated with that growing up, is not knowing the why. But what we find is once they understand the purpose and intent of what the tools are for.
Right.
Once it goes past being in, because the reason this guy never saw safety in a JSA, it was just the stuff we were doing for the office. As long as the paperwork was attached to the job,
it was rote. It was
sit in.
It was ritual.
It was ritual, and not a whole lot of power coming out of it.
Right.
And now it's like, look, it's about, are we having the discussions before we start the job? And are we, you know, I mean, it's real simple job. What are we about to do? How can we get hurt? How are we not going to get hurt?
There you go. Okay.
It's pretty basic stuff.
Okay, so coaching, consulting, what'd you say, facilitation?
And then facilitation,
what
and that's
that?
Really training. But when you look at it, we'll do a 3-day class, and if you look at that, we'll probably spend about 35% on content where we're actually teaching them about the tools, and the rest of the time is what was—
Now, when you say teaching them about the tools, what tools are you talking about?
Yeah, we have what we call the core, or sometimes called the power tools, and that is having a job safety analysis, or whatever your company calls it. It's about having stop work authority or time out. It's about permit to work. and the proper, and again, to the purpose and intent of the purpose of a permit to work. It is about a safety conversation. And then the last one's about a debrief. And if you think about those five tools, it's what they do every single day. They may not be involved with the permit, but every single day we're doing high-risk work. So if we get really good at risk assessing, if we get really good at stopping the job when we see something that doesn't look right, seem right, if we get really good at making sure that our permit is for the right things, we're coordinated, you know, and then if we debrief at the end of the job, if you learn those basics, now we can do some really high-risk stuff, and we can do it safely and efficiently. So we go back and we simplify why we're doing those tools and kind of look at how they've been kind of misguided and misunderstood, and then they start to see how they are meant to work. Now, the other 60 to 70% of the class is them getting up and practicing, where we do experiential learning. They get up and they take a job. We'll have wooden stuff set up where they're about 2 feet off the ground, and they have to risk assess the job, have a pre-tower meeting. They call timeouts throughout it, and then at the end, they debrief, and they start to see, wow, this stuff really works. So we've misused these tools so badly over the years. A lot of this is about demystifying why they've been used badly, because if all you're doing is putting in paperwork, you cannot be, if that's all you see, it's hard to buy in. You have to understand that that's not the way it was intended to be in the first place.
Well, and so in fact, you've actually written a book. It's called Commit to Safe and Efficient Operations. And I'm sitting here looking at it, and you got it divided up into four parts, and part one is philosophy.
Yes. And some of the things in there are really, one, it's about behavior, people's behavior. One of the things is about, it's about safety and efficiency. You can't talk about one without talking about the other. I talk a little bit about Get Her Done by my favorite philosopher. Philosopher.
Larry the cable guy.
Yeah, we had to, in fact, the whole chapter talks about Larry in there. And my publisher, Penwell, wouldn't let me publish it without getting Larry's permission.
Oh, really? And so did you get it?
We got his permission. And like I said, my mother loved my book and Larry the Cable Guy liked it. I'm not sure about everybody else, but it was a good thing.
But you can get it on Amazon?
You can get it on Amazon. Actually, for the IEDC bookstore carries it as well.
Oh, okay. All
right. But you can get it on Amazon. There's a Kindle and also an Audible.
Okay. All right. Okay. So then you've got three chapters on what we talked about. So you start with philosophy. That's part one. Part two is management commitment.
Yes.
Which is what you just talked about, like the VPs coming to the, you know, they don't just, hey, I'm here. Glad you guys are in this course I assigned to you. And they're actually participating. They show a commitment to it.
In fact, part of what we did with Seadrill is we took the executive team one at a time out to the rig for 3 days with a coach and got them out on deck for 3 days. And they were watching guys risk assess. They were having safety conversations. I called it the smell what you're shoveling tour. And where they got up and started realizing where the disconnect was and where sometimes their language was being misunderstood out on the rigs. And so it was a real powerful part. Every single guy that went out there walked out. When they came off, they, even if they'd worked on the rigs, it's been a while. So they went back and saw the value.
So part three is core management systems. And I'm looking here at one of the chapters, the safety observation and conversation process. And it says in parentheses here, capital S, capital T, capital A, capital R. So that's STAR. Is that stop, think, act, and review? Or
it's C, talk, agreement, and record. So you see something, you talk to somebody, you get an agreement of what you're going to do different, and then you record it at the end.
See, talk, agree, and record.
Yeah, and by the way, you know, as I tell them, we want to record, but it's the least important part of it. It's people talking to people and keeping each other safe. And, you know, I may be working on something and I'm a safe worker, but all of a sudden I don't realize I have veered off into an area where I'm under a load or something, and I need the guys around me to keep me safe. And so those behavioral-based safety works, but unfortunately most of the time it's become a card system and we've missed the purpose and intent.
Okay, which means you got to go to the final part of the book, and there's five chapters on it, and that's implementing change.
Implementing change, which is what I've been doing for the last 27 years, is working with companies to help transform their safety culture, transform their leadership. We talk about how we've done that successfully with three major drilling contractors over the years. And there's a recipe. We found out what worked, and that's what this book is about, is a recipe of proven, tried and true. And right now with the industry, with the great crew change having taken place, and we've got a lot of new people coming in the industry, we got to get back to the basics. We got to get back and get these guys steered in. There's some great young people coming up. Now, we all think they're a little strange, but I'm pretty sure our folks thought we were strange. So it's just
true.
It's part of the way life is.
Yeah.
But there's some great kids with some great work ethics, but we've got to, hopefully they're coming in and we're doing a better job than we did 25 years ago. And just real quickly for the young people, when I started this off and I'd have people hold up their hands in class, they were missing fingers all over the classroom. Now, very seldom do you see that. We have come a long ways. So we still want to get better. We don't believe that anybody needs to lose their life or lose a body part to do the job. We're going to get scratches and things. That's part of life. But we have come a long ways, but we got to keep going.
Well, I agree with you 100%. Everybody out there listening, get that story out there, because we have to present this positive influence of our industry. And we are doing positive things like this. And the more we can get that message out, that's one of the reasons for this podcast. Chris, you came in from Lafayette to Houston today. We had lunch. I appreciate you taking the time. Really appreciate you coming on. I'll put you on the spot here. You got any one particular story or something that stands out that you want to tell us about before we sign off here?
Well, I just think that it has to become a way of life. I'll just tell you this real quick story.
Go ahead.
Have you ever been?
We love stories.
Have you ever been in a church before?
A time or two. Okay. My dad was a minister. Yeah. Hey, let me tell you, you know, you've heard about people say I was at church every time the doors were open.
Right.
I was at church every time the doors were open and when they weren't open.
Well, I'm not going to talk about religion, but I asked the guys, have you ever been to church, a synagogue, a mosque? And most people say, yes, they have. And then I asked them, have you ever seen anybody smoke in a church? And I'm talking about Sunday morning, about 11:45, somebody in pew number 3 lights one up. Well, those, we've never seen that before. But then I asked him, I said, have you ever seen a non-smoking sign at a church, mosque, a synagogue? And they will say, no. Well, why will people not smoke? Why would you not smoke? There's not a rule about it. There's not a sign. What do you think, Russell? Why would people not smoke?
Because it's just not it's not part of the culture.
It's not part of the culture. It's about respect. And, you know, that's the kind of culture we want to create on the rigs. And not that it's a culture about not smoking, but it's a culture about taking shortcuts and doing at-risk behaviors. It's not accepted here. And so when we create that culture, you know, I was on a rig in the North Sea where, you know, I got on the rig and went to get my induction. And they said, I'd give you one, but it's not going to be much better than the one you just got. So I signed right there and it was a train wreck. Everything I saw was a train wreck. I'm in the Gulf of Mexico, the Mars platform. And I get out there and they say, hey, put your bags away and come back up here and we'll give you the orientation. So I go down the stairs and somebody stops me because I'm not holding a handrail. So I put my bag up and then I come back up the stairs and somebody stops me because I'm still not holding the handrail. I was a slow learner. So, but that happened before I got to the orientation, had a great orientation. And that culture was beautiful out there. People got along. People watched out for one another. And so what I say is go set your culture. Leaders, set your cultures. And just say, hey, we're not going to put up with that. Because if you stop the little things, it'll take care of the big things.
Okay. So I was wrong, folks. I said a while ago that what we were talking about was worth the price of admission. Actually, we're going to have to charge you double for this podcast. So, Chris, I really appreciate it again. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it, Russell.
And as we sign off, here, as always, thanks to everybody out there for listening. You're the reason why we can have this podcast. Please tell your friends to listen. Please post it on LinkedIn and all your other social media, and we'll see you next time.
Tune in next week for another engaging episode of the Oil and Gas HSE podcast, a production of the Oil and Gas Global Network. Learn more at oggn.com.